Hello and welcome back to the Research VR podcast, the podcast about the science and design of virtual reality. I'm your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me today is Mr. Peter Lekoff.
Hello.
Hi, Peter. We're doing a two-man show, doing a little GDC wrap-up, as well as IEEE, which Peter went to, and a few bits and pieces of fun information, and just kind of catch up on our lives. So this will be a more of an informational podcast where we discuss some of the things that's been exciting us from GDC. We got to try out a few pieces of awesome secretive hardware, saw some new software that hasn't really released, so stay tuned. So yeah, how should we start this, Peter? I guess chronologically, this IEEE was before GDC, so.
It was, and I think it's in a way less full of magical details that I was able to pick up. So it is apparently, which I was not aware of, the biggest VR scientific conferences. It had 700 visitors from around the globe. It was, funny enough, this time in Germany. And the keynote was given by Skip Rizzo, who is like a very famous medical VR expert. He was basically doing a revive of the whole medical research science that has been done, and basically showing the potential that it, you know, finally should be able to be in the medical institutions. So it was kind of very exciting. There were obviously some industrial partners as well as Magic Leap. Funny enough, they were recruiting there as crazy. And I think one of the more memorable things that I basically witnessed there, when you don't count in all the amazing people that I met and also listeners, so shout out to everyone who is a listener who I met there, was the visit to the Tübingen Max Planck Institute, where I saw a 10-meter robot, basically like an industrial robot arm, where you sit on a capsule on top of it and it basically swings you around and can simulate motion, drifts, and when it accelerates, it kind of slowly shifts your orientation, so you're kind of leaning back, but it does it so slow
that you don't
notice it.
Can you describe this machine again? I'm trying to imagine what it looks like. You're at an end of a 10-foot arm?
Like, yes.
And you're like sitting in a
huge
capsule.
Industrial arm that they use for, you know, basically manufacturing.
Like car parts.
Cars,
and stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
like yes. It has all the degrees of freedom and can do all the swiveling.
I think that's like 3 or 4. It was itself on a rail, so it could move forward and backward.
Oh, interesting.
And on top of that, there was a capsule where you would sit inside, and there was basically a screen projection. So you would be immersed in virtual reality while this thing spins around, it accelerates crazily. And I think one of the magic parts about it, when it accelerates, it kind of tilts your body slightly up, but it does it in a slow way, so you don't notice the tilt, but you feel the gravity.
Hmm.
And the mind is tricked into believing that you're still accelerating, even though the robot stops at some point, because of the tilt. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Huh, so like the acceleration, they can do like linear forward car acceleration by tilting you without you realizing.
Yes.
I mean, really,
Yes.
I guess.
The first, they accelerate you, and after they accelerate you, the robot cannot basically do this acceleration movement unlimited because
they really accelerate you by moving you forward and then they start slowly tilting you. Yes. Oh, cool, cool. Yes. That makes more sense.
Yes. And it can also tilt left and right, so you kind of feel like you're, you know, being going into the curves and stuff. It's pretty magnificent and very impressive. That also like this huge spider cam rig, but not with a spider cam, but with a 100 kilo platform. And when you sit on it and it accelerates with 1G, I think that's the maximum it can do. There's like basically 2 tons of force on each of the metal ropes. It's crazy.
Wow.
And all for science.
All for science. That's right.
There was actually also very interesting papers that were going in the same direction we discussed here on the podcast. One of the sessions was about typing in VR. Mm-hmm. So there were a few scientists who basically evaluated different methods of typing, and it's very interesting because one of the findings was that you can, for example, basically put the virtual keyboard not where the real keyboard is, but higher. And this is due to a fact that, which I wasn't aware of myself, you have maybe 100 degrees field of view of the headset vertically, but not horizontally. Horizontal field of view of a headset those days is way smaller than what we basically can see in real life. So when you type and you see what you're typing, you don't need to move your head. But in a headset, you do. And that's something that they found out and some other things.
Well, that's based on older headset specs?
No.
On current, so currently the headsets have a higher field of view than vertically than they do horizontally?
Maybe vice versa. Maybe I mixed it up.
Yeah, so, I'd have to think about that.
Wait, horizontal and vertical. Horizontal is it's straight, right?
Yeah, it's the
X. So horizontally you have 100 degree, but vertically you have way less than you would usually see with your own eyes.
Oh, so that's the point you're trying to make, you have to scroll down to kind of like see more text rather than bolt your eyes left and right. I was going to say, Toby has been showing off their new demos as well. And yeah, the eye tracking is getting better and better. I didn't get to try their newest demo, but some of the people that had just tried it for the first time came up to me afterwards and said, like, dude, that you're right. Like, that just gave me superpowers that I had no idea would be a thing. But I mean, Gen 2, baby. Gen 2.
Gen 2. And I actually had a discussion on that. There was a researcher from Italy who I think right now works in Sweden. And they have been also on the Barcelona Congress. Is it the Mobile World Congress? Yeah. And what he told me is they had access to a real 5G network, and what they're working on is basically foveated streaming of 360 video. So he works a lot with eye tracking, and the loop between the server and you in a real working 5G network was 5 milliseconds. That's crazy. So low.
Wow.
Yes. So they can actually really use eye tracking to change, you know, basically the data flow. Continuously.
It scares the hell out of me thinking about it now. I mean, I've always been torn on eye tracking because I like we said, the superpower aspect of it is pretty amazing. Yeah. But I mean, just reading about what the amount of data we're collecting on ourselves right now. I read a really interesting Twitter thread this morning where someone went through everything they could find themselves on their own Google account that you can download. I think it's like if you go to google.com/takeout, you can download everything your account has, including like the things that were associated, like the apps that were on your phone, the logs of you opening them, the somehow also like the pictures you've sent on like Facebook and the stickers even that you've sent on Facebook Messenger back and forth, like those are all somehow in this Google Takeout.
That's creepy.
And I mean, yeah, with stuff that's happening with like Cambridge Analytica, like the whole story of like, what are we doing, guys? Like, are we just handing the keys to anyone that has nefarious reasons? Like, I think even the engineers, this is also a problem that I'm seeing a lot with perhaps the way these stories are being reported, is that obviously like Facebook is the bad guy here, or at least that's the story. But if you hear from insiders in the industry, like this isn't a Facebook exclusivity, right? Like everyone tries to get as much as they can about the users that they have so that they can know. Obviously, like most of Facebook's revenue model is built off of the data that they, off of selling the data to small advertisers, big advertisers, and with other companies, like their models might be different, but it's just kind of, I don't know, it's obviously very uneasy, and it's also, I don't know. I honestly have no idea how to proceed with like.
Yeah, but you're not the only one.
Being on the cutting edge.
The problem is that the general awareness of privacy and that you should save your data is somehow not so strong anymore, as one could say we live in a post-privacy world. However, particularly with Cambridge Analytica in the case right now, what you see is when your data is not being used to present you the new shoes you want to buy, or basically target you into getting a certain gadget, but you know, to basically elect someone or don't elect someone who you like or you don't like, then you suddenly realize what can be done with the data.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Facebook, they're trying to apologize. They apologized, right? And I mean, they changed the way you handle data. It's, I mean,
they did, they're doing what they need to do, or kind of like, right. Yeah. They realize this is a huge story and it kind of is killing their image. And so they're like, we need to be as human as we can be. And they're trying to put Zuckerberg out there. And let me finish this thought. To the Facebook engineers kind of, to their, in terms of how like, in it on them. I don't think they have any nefarious reasons, at least most of them, to build things that will be used for bad reasons. But if there, when there are bad actors in the play, like third party bad actors like Cambridge Analytica, that can, you know, what they're trying to do is change it, is to influence elections. And I mean, that's obviously on the very high end, but like there, that goes in down deep. And when you have actors that want to do bad things, we now have the tools for them to do it, and that's, I think that's where we end up, is like, rather than is Facebook trying to, you know, change the election, I don't think they are, but like they've created an environment that can be possible. And like, what do we do about this? Like, it's not the Facebook Messenger engineer's fault. Like, I mean, perhaps they cut some corners when they were trying to protect certain things, especially like on Android versus iPhone. Like, turns out iPhone is way more locked down in terms of the access that app developers have. But like, I don't know. It's I feel like we're just blaming each other and blaming perhaps the wrong people and not trying to. I mean, I don't even know if this problem can be solved on the public stage, right? Like, is this going to be solved because of CNN writing an article about it, or a podcast talking about it? But
not really. No,
I think we're just capturing our conversation.
Exactly. You definitely have a good point. And like, once again, when we just consider the amount of knowledge that the internet gave us and the amount of freedom, it's great.
Right.
But I mean, there is a certain responsibility that comes with it, that particularly companies in the Silicon Valley area try to, you know, avoid for as long as they can, which I totally understand. You know, you need to innovate. But when you hear that Mark Zuckerberg is basically saying, okay, fine, just regulate us, it's okay, you basically witness a case where a company that is as big and as important as Facebook is realizing slowly how much responsibility it yields, and they are willing to, you know, basically lose a certain amount of their revenue through regulation just to get rid of this enormous responsibility that just no one on the earth wants to have. And I think this is the core of the problem. No one wants to have this responsibility. Politicians will basically create laws, like in Germany or in Europe, there are some strange internet laws that sometimes, you know, you overblock or you do things, but they are more like a reaction to the public outcry. But they don't really sit down and think about this problem decently. Yeah. Those laws usually are more reactions. Facebook itself don't want to have any responsibility neither. And I mean, they are willingly apparent. They seem to be willing to give even some control over what they're doing to the government, so they get rid of this huge responsibility. And then, who is responsible? The user? Maybe. But again, you can't live without a Facebook Messenger those days easily. And when we consider that Facebook also bought Oculus, and it's also part of the virtual reality ecosystem, right? It's just a question of how much they influence us and how much we as users can do. But I don't think it will be solved that easy.
It's a great way to start a podcast, right? The doom and gloom. And just be like, we're all...
But we will come to the fun part.
All right, the fun... Yeah, let's talk about the fun parts.
GDC.
So GDC was pretty fun. I was not expecting to go. But last minute, we actually had a podcast scheduled with Servios to do a postmortem on the Sprint Vector launch and kind of talking about what they've learned now that they've, you know, released it out to the mass public. And not only that, but they actually, since we last spoke to them, have announced two experiences, or I guess two games. One of them is a boxing game called Creed, and the other is a music creation tool called Electronauts, which that was the thing I was really interested in, because I'm like, that's one of the big categories of things to do in VR that I still, like, I'm very curious about, and I want to see more happen, but there's only, like, one or two real apps that are out there that do that. One being Exa, Infinite Instrument, Zach Kinster's app, and Soundstage, which got bought by Google.
Crazy.
Yeah, which that was an interesting take, but Yeah, actually, let's. Oh, so I was talking about the story of how I ended up at GDC. So we were going to do a podcast, and it turns out that podcast was during GDC, and nobody was going to have access to, you know, headsets in the quiet room to do a podcast. They're like, why don't you come and like meet us at GDC? Or don't you live in San Francisco? And it's like, yeah, but I don't have a pass. They're like, oh, here you go. And they, let me register with them, which was really, really nice. Thank you, Jade, for arranging that. I appreciate it. And basically gave me access to the show floor, and I think some of the talks, but unfortunately I had all the talks. Like, I went through the whole list and bookmarked ones I wanted to go to, but then trying to walk into it, they denied me. So that was fun. I guess I didn't have access to all the talks, and I wasn't sure which ones I did, and so left with a sour taste in my mouth, and I was like, you know what, frick it, tax. I'll listen to it online later on. Seeing the schedule, like there was some pretty fantastic conversations that were had that I'm sure we'll come back to. But more importantly, the rumors. Oh, are we talking about Magic Leap?
No. Okay. But I mean, you've been, you know, going in between those developers and.
Oh, sure. Actually, we will talk about Magic Leap in a little bit because Magic Leap was there and present and was having tons of meetings with developers and also giving demos to developers. I didn't get a demo. However, there were people that did that. I know. So I'll talk about that in a little bit as well. Actually, let's start with Electronauts, because I mentioned that. I didn't try too many new games that were coming out. I mean, the Oculus booth was pretty full, and I wasn't going in as a media badge, so I didn't have the that first class access to all the software. So I the app that I did try was Electronauts, and I spent a good hour in it in like the Valve booth.
A
good hour, I'd say, because like they had a bunch of songs. Oh, let me explain the premise.
Yeah.
So Servius, right? The people that have made Raw Data and Sprint Vector, like these are like fun running or action games. They're using some of the tech that they've built in those games, like including the body IK, I guess visuals and just aesthetic as well, to make a loop generating kind of digital audio workstation based from real songs. So they license songs, they take the samples from the actual producers, and then they put it in a pretty accessible way in VR so that like the loops are quantized, the notes that you have access to are all in the key of the song. It's not a full on keyboard, so that they're giving you like, let's say like a pentatonic scale on a minor song.
Somehow like Guitar Hero.
Kind of like Guitar Hero, except you don't actually have anything to follow. It's all up to you in terms of like how you want to produce a song. And so you have three different, like, I'd say monitors or windows around you, and you can have different apps on each window. And one of the windows is to like cue to different parts of the song. So like you have the build, you have or like intro, the build, like a drop. I don't know if chorus is one of those, but yeah, so you have like the different sections which have different instruments already automated for those sections, and what you have access to are like the synth, like the solo synth, sometimes like cool cue, just kind of like leads. A lot of the instrumentations that they add on top to do the flares, you have access to like vocal things like or just like, you know, random stuff, so you can throw into the mix, and also like the vocal track, so you could do like, you know, DJs have the pads where they can go like voice out the whole word, so that like it starts getting cut up. What do you call that?
Like scratching, or
kind of like scratching, like like it just, you're cutting the track a little short, so it's not like the full word, but
sure.
So I had a ton of fun with that, and it's like, I mean, I come from a pretty musical background, and to me, I've been wanting to make music for a while, but Like, I have never really gotten into, like, DAW music production. I don't know. I grew up around it. My dad was really into it, but I don't know. I always got intimidated but from the software side of things. But
so what you say is that now with those tools, you're ready to become...
No. It's not by any means. I think what I can become is like a Twitch DJ, is to like spin tracks and like make tracks and produce and dance at the same time on Twitch. Because they have some pretty awesome camera control in the app itself. And the IK of the DJ is dope. So they were throwing, I think at the Unity party, they were DJing, like two people were DJing on stage in Electronauts, which is cool.
Whoa.
I had a lot of fun with that. Oh, I can't believe I didn't say this. I tried Beat Saber, which is probably the most anticipated VR title of the year because of what, like,
Beat Saber, one
GIF. Yeah. It's the game is a cross between Audio Shield and Fruit Ninja. So rather than punching this notes that are coming at you, you have a lightsaber. Ooh. And you're slicing through these blocks, these directional blocks. And it is probably one of the most fun things you'll do. Like, and I think it's a console seller based on the tweets that I've seen, like people that have been like, I didn't think VR was cool, and I just saw the first person view footage of the person playing this, and they instantly get it. They're like, oh, I can see that being incredibly fun, and also exhilarating, and like, you know, if you want to get into a workout, that sort of thing, like, it can for sure be that.
You know what? I'm just looking at the trailer, and I find it fascinating. When you look at the trailer, every time they hit like a note, the camera somehow shakes. I wonder how it feels in VR.
Like, it seems first person view?
Yeah, I don't have audio on YouTube right now. And when I see how he hits those notes, I kind of feel a bass, like through the visual.
Probably the world. Yeah, I'm sure.
Like, you know, the world shakes, kind of.
Interesting.
Wonder how nausing it is.
It wasn't at all, actually, because you're standing still in an environment and things are coming at you. And like, people that have typical nausea problems in VR or VR sickness problems, did great in this game as far as I could see. So it was really, really, I think, next level in terms of the content we're starting to see. And it just comes from two developers too, I should say, Jan and Yaroslav, I believe. And yeah, the music is original. Like, the guy that was composed that, like, used to make music for, I think, Blizzard and EA, and I think he's gonna be like a pretty big DJ soon from like a game like this. Really exciting stuff there. Okay, the more important thing I want to talk about today is Varjo, probably one of the most interesting pieces of hardware that I've seen this year, or probably since like I saw the Rift or the Vive for the first time.
Whoa.
I mean, the Vive Pro was pretty cool. We had a whole episode about it. I talked about, like, you know, higher resolution headset and what that looks like. Keep in mind, I haven't seen the Pimax.
What's so special about the Varjo?
So Varjo, we've talked about them a little bit before. I think I call them Varjo or Varjo. It's Varjo. It's a Finnish company. And by the way, Varjo means shadow. They let me know that because it's important. So the trick about this company is that they're creating a headset that has what they call retina level resolution. So your eyes, you can see as good as your eyes can see. So to actually create this panel, they've combined two different panels. One panel that's pretty much the same as your Rift and Vive in terms of the field of view, how big it is, what it looks like. They might have done some things for this on the screen door effect. We actually didn't really speak about specs. Meeting I had with them was way more... Well, I wasn't even talking to them as like press or media for the podcast. We were talking more on like photogrammetry and and having content for high resolution headsets. But the panel, yeah. So the panel looks like a Rift or a Vive. But the crazy thing is, in the middle of the panel is a way smaller version, like basically as big as your fovea, or slightly bigger than the fovea of your vision. The same resolution, but way smaller. So, like, the pixel density is incredibly dense.
Where did they get such a panel?
I don't know. what they're doing is basically using a mirror to display, mm-hmm. to project that smaller panel on top of the bigger panel. And then somehow they're doing they're feathering out the two displays. So you don't really see any transition. So they showed me a prototype from last year, from like November, which was the first one that they showed at Slush. And you can really tell the difference between the two panels, but you kind of got a good sense of like what the high resolution, what does a high resolution headset looks like. What they showed me this week was a prototype they made the week before, which didn't have the Steam VR tracking integrated yet, although the first one did. And they had feathered the panels way better. The colors were, I think, more accurate. And like, just to give you a sense of like what I saw and how high res it was, because it's, for me, it was really hard to imagine what a, like having a Rift or a Vive, you can't really tell like what a higher resolution headset would look like. You know, it's hard to imagine somewhat, but this is how I can describe it. I was standing inside of a room looking at probably at the end of the room, looking forward to a wall where there was a TV, and the content that was playing on the TV, I could tell was like either 1080p or higher than 1080p. So, you know, that feeling when you're in a room and you're looking at a 4K TV and you're like, whoa, like that's got some pixels in there. Or like, you know, you could tell that mm-hmm. there's such dense amount of visual information. So that was one example. I was pretty impressed, and they're like, okay, you're here to see photogrammetry. Like, let's show you some photogrammetry. Mm-hmm. And one of their engineers had done a scan of an art gallery inside of this brick kind of room that had a bunch of like firewood on the side. And it was just like, everything was very raw and rocky or woody. And wow, dude, like it really blew open. Like, what I think photogrammetry will look like, or the detail that you can actually see in these models. So, I mean, standing again from across the room, I could look at a small wood chopped mm-hmm. piece of wood, and you can see the grooves on it really, really distinctly. And you could, like, honestly even makes the imperfections of photogrammetry somewhat more noticeable if you don't take care of it, because like you have such fine edges and corners that you just couldn't see before. So now we have access to that, and I don't know what the pricing on this is going to be. I don't know what the actual product even will be, for what controls it'll come with, but I think it was just the most promising piece of technology that I saw.
It doesn't sound like, I mean, obviously mechanical parts are difficult to engineer, but we're not speaking about a 50K resolution screen, but rather, you know, two panels, one special panel, one normal panel, and then you need to move it around. It's obviously not cheap, but doesn't sound like it will, be very expensive.
The one I tried, we've talked about them in the past, and I think their patents say that they're going to have the foveated version where they have an eye tracker mm-hmm. in there, and it's kind of like a MEMS, tracking system. Like,
exactly.
It moves the mirror a little bit so that it the high resolution panel follows your eye. The second version prototype that I tried did not have that, but despite that, like, it wasn't 100% necessary to have it even to get mm-hmm. to get a better experience than what is possible now. And one of the demos I also tried was like standing inside of like a B2 bomber. I think you can look straight forward and read the dials on the cockpit. Like, yeah, you can read it pretty well. And I'd say it's your vision in that foveated screen is pretty much just as good as you can in real life. So like the small text that you can't read in real life that's far away, you're not going to be able to read that in VR either. Like I think that's where the kind of cutting off point is.
Maybe my dream of just working in VR is coming closer.
Yeah, it's definitely getting closer. And like for someone that uses, let's say, big screen to read or doing a lot of like modeling work, I think car manufacturers, plane manufacturers, like this is big for them. However, I will say this though. So things looked awesome from far away that you can read, but thinking about it on a smaller scale, since the actual let's say the field of view of the of that high resolution display is kind of still small. So if you're standing next to a huge monitor, you're kind of going to see the variance between the really high res portions of the text and what's in your peripheral vision. So like they don't have that yet figured out, I guess, is that it's better to almost like stand further away and get all of it in high resolution than to stand pretty close or kind of close and get an object to be, you know, somewhat blurry on the sides. So it's kind of hard to, I guess, describe also without visuals, but
yeah, but I think the audience got a good understanding how much it actually influenced your basically, I don't know, belief in VR, maybe not, but more like you just said it's similar to, you know, trying the you know, the good old Rift the first time.
Yeah.
However, in the pre-episode discussion that lasted for only 3 minutes, you mentioned that you were kind of disappointed by the augmented reality.
Oh yeah, I did.
to put it in contrast, you know.
So I guess we'll talk.
After all, we are research VR, right? Not research IR.
That's right. I've been thinking about that. I'm like, should we at some point? Are we gonna have to change our name to Research XR? Which no, I'll never call it XR.
No.
Okay, so. I tried the ODG, the latest ODG glasses, which are supposed to be like the underdogs in the game, kind of like Meta as well. I think Meta is a certified underdog. But the ODG are the not known company that has been doing like really interesting advancements on the way more on the visual side. So the screen, it basically kind of looks like a pair of glasses, like a slick pair of Oakleys that are kind of thicker. And obviously since nobody can still project black, we're still limited to like darkening at least the lens that you're seeing through. And I did get a recording of what it looks like through my phone. And I think I was playing this card game, kind of like a math. Oh, let me mute my phone here. The field of view vertically was pretty limited. Horizontally, I'd say is like HoloLens Plus.
Which one did you try? The R9 or?
It must have been the R9. Yeah. And looking at the video now, it seems like the pixel density is pretty decent, probably better than the HoloLens.
Yeah, but it's dual 1080.
But what you'll see in the video is, I'll probably post either a GIF or the video itself and the show links, is that the tracking is pretty damn jittery. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, you know, there's definitely people around me. This is a conference space. Like, this is not the ideal viewing testing ground to do a demo like this. But like, other tracking systems I've seen do really well in busy environments.
How does it track?
I don't know. I think it's all set out.
Dual stereo depth cameras for advanced mapping and tracking.
Yeah,
exposing port for customization and Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 chipset for the ultimate XR experience.
XR
technology. Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I saw that and then what did I try? I tried a right eye AR display, which I didn't expect for it to be only right eye. I thought it was going to be a full-on MR XR experience, but there's still a good amount of products on the market that are, you know, just doing that phone projection AR into your eye thing
and to
in
be
the corner. And it's really hard, dude. Like, even though I'm right eye dominant, like, it's so hard to actually concentrate on unless it's like a quick glance type of thing, like, oh, I'm looking at the direction. Like, they showed me you want to watch a movie in here? Like, you want to try a movie demo? And I'm like watching here with terrible colors, like terrible brightness, opacity, everything basically that like is worse than your phone display.
They are still useful for this particular case where you're basically, you know, in a production facility or you need to this quick glance of information. So for that, they're fine. However, that's like
a very good. Why can't you do that with a screen though? Like, if it's a quick glance, then just put a freaking screen up, like a monitor somewhere. I don't know. Like, I and here's the thing. I actually have a great use case for these AR headsets for me. Like, for as a photogrammetry person, I would love to have a feed of my viewfinder of both my DSLR and my drone in my eye, so that I don't have to keep putting my eye up to check the the focus or just the, you know, how the histogram, if I have a feed of my into it in my eye, like I'd love that. But like, that's the only thing I can think of that I would want to use it for, not for any sort of entertainment purposes. Hell, not when I'm like talking to someone either. Like if I'm on a job site scanning and someone comes to talk to me, I'm going to take it off and I'm going to like look at them in the eye. I'm not going to be like, oh, look at me, you know, through my glasses. And while I may not be recording you. I mean, I don't know. That's at least the fear from their side, but
no, sure. That's what made the Google Glass so creepy for people.
Right. So I think AR for now might be still suffering from the residual effects of the Google Glass launch. But oh, so that's a perfect lead into Magic Leap, which I mean, okay, so based on the fact that I didn't get to try it, and I should say I somehow got into a Magic Leap party. Which I signed up for on the way to the party, and then I went inside, and it was a ping pong place, so they gave out free Magic Leap ping pongs and paddles, and now I have one, and I'm very proud of it. But yeah, a lot of developers got to try it, and I heard them having meetings and talking about content, and I don't know the specifics of what they saw, but they showed some pretty interesting visual demo. Okay, I mean, I'm not naming any names or people, from the grapevines that I heard about, people were impressed at the tracking that, you know, it wasn't suffering from the rest of the AR, the usual AR problems that you see. So it's a good thing to have the tracking down, but nobody was like totally mind blown either. Mm-hmm. Like nobody came out and was like, oh my God. You know, like I just saw the future, which I mean, I heard some good things, that's for sure. But I guess content will be king at this point of like the stuff that you will do in there will be like that. That might be the selling point for now.
Absolutely.
The way it works is you using one controller, the Totem controller, and also it's a Sigdoff controller, as well as they have gestural recognition. And kind of hand tracking. I don't know if it's as precise as finger tracking, but so you could do things with both. I didn't hear anything about battery life, and I don't know in terms of the specs of what it can run, like how many polys and compared to what we have now.
It doesn't matter. To be honest, I had a discussion with a researcher from Facebook actually. On the IEEE VR, where we talked about the Oculus Go and where you just can't compare the specs necessarily to a phone. So they might have not up-to-date processor, but because they don't have like an Android stack below it, you can't just compare the processor. And also they use different lenses, so it kind of looks better, whatever. So I think the specs at this point are not the most important part, unless we really speak about something as a headset you tried, where you really have crisp, sharp, foveated rendering in your face, right? That's wonderful, but we don't speak about devices that somehow magically achieve the undoable. I think it's more about the content, usability, distribution, the platform idea. And well, I mean, people apparently didn't dislike it, which is already good.
But yeah.
I would imagine that they should have been a little bit more mind blown.
You'd hope. You definitely hope. And perhaps developers also are somewhat more jaded than most people. Or you could argue the opposite, where developers are way more forgiving because they know the technical limitations of what can be achieved for now. But one thing I'm disappointed that I didn't hear anyone comment about is like if they had the lens. Yeah, exactly. Like the lens accommodation problem solved, which like from all the patents that I've tried to read and understand what they're doing, like that was a big aspect of what they wanted to create. But I know since then they've gone through multiple iterations of and how the display is actually going to be made rather than the crazy piezoelectric like scanning fiber display to now it's probably just around another waveguide. Yeah, it's fascinating, and I'm excited to see it. Maybe if I go to Florida sometime, I'll just drop by.
Yeah, just invite invite us to your office to show them your magic laser sauce and
all my drones. So yeah, that I think that's what there is to say about Magic Leap. I'm glad they're now taking a more active part in the developer Absolutely. Community and just kind of being less high and mighty and on a
golden throne. Honestly, they are also hiring throne. Like crazy. I think I have a photo of their booth, so that also is this hiring booth on the
internet. Yeah, it's a huge company, man. Like, they have pretty big turnover rates at this point too. Like, some of the people that I follow on Twitter, that were at Magic Leap are now not at Magic Leap. Were there for 3-4 years. So, I mean, it's a company that employs over 500 people. And at that point, you're going to have a lot of people coming
senior backend developer for perception analytics, computer vision engineer, software engineer in deep learning and computer vision. Sounds kind of, Sounds By the way, if you want a job in Switzerland, jobs-switzerland@magicleap.com. Send them all your spam.
I'd sit back on this one and see how it turns out. We said last week with Ian Hamilton, he's worried that they might not have enough money for version 2, where, version 1 is going to be very enthusiast-based or developer-based. How do you get that to the next step in consumer products?
Okay, but let's remember how the DK1 started. A lot of enthusiast developers got it and were, like, really in love, but I don't perceive same... are around Magic Leap. They are more like...
Well, Oculus... I mean, the DK1 did so well because what was DK1 competing with? Who were they competing with? No, nothing. Yeah, and you don't have Magic Leaps competing with HoloLens, with Meta, with possibly, by version 2.0, Apple and Amazon and Google Facebook. Those are major, major... forces that are going to be driving this industry, and Oculus in the early days with the Kickstarter was kind of driving the entire the pace of the industry by themselves. And at this point, like, the pace is set by the front runner, which I think Microsoft really did with the HoloLens 2 years ago. And people were like, "Oh, like, if now we have something that everything is going to be compared to, rather than, oh, this is just a demo." And so, based off of that, I don't know if I'm more critical now of AR and, like, more skeptical of how long it's going to take for anything usable and viable to be deployed.
I was always a little bit skeptical regards the problem of computer vision. So where you really need to make a device that does not only understand its position in the space, but also understands what those objects are. It's just, for me, a very computational heavy task that you just can't possibly, in right now, at least in my mind, push into a small, glasses frame. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, that's why Magic Leap, I guess, also has this weird Discman external computer device, right?
And when
when we make an analogy, We talked on the panel on the IEEE basically about how the scientists who research VR itself and how scientists who wants to use VR as a method kind of need to build bridges in between because, there's still a lot of room between them. And I think the same goes for hardware manufacturers and content developers. So while basically the hardware manufacturers focus so much on those devices and, making the boxes pretty and shipping it, I think what drives success of a certain platform or a certain device, whether it's, in research or more in the consumer market, obviously more is like the hype around it. So whether, you want to use it, when the students in the research facilities, would like to, play around with the Oculus, they will try to convince their professors, I did, to get it. But if they're not convinced about the Magic Leaps, then they'll just sit it out. And I think the same goes for a consumer. I mean, if you want to have, the moment there will be a game, which is Mario on VR, right? This platform will win, I guess, right?
Beat Saber. So,
maybe Beat Saber, yeah. So one of those games can change a lot. And you see it with Nintendo doing over and over again. They release some weird device, no one gets it. Then everyone wants Mario and they fall in love with the device. And I think the same needs to happen with those companies. But I don't see the sexiness of Magic Leap. I see their disruptiveness, I see their startupness, I see their hugeness, but accepting 500 million from Saudi Arabia or whatever they did doesn't necessarily make them very
I mean,
good looking to this community.
Yeah. I don't know if they care. I mean, that's the thing is like, do they care about researchers wanting to use their headsets? And like, you know, probably not. And I think they're more interested in enterprise and consumer users. But yeah, at least yeah, for now, maybe I think they a would lot like of AR. To
research. I mean, look, I think it's very crucial that new technology gets research, right? And also is being used in research. And when your device is, you know, not even attractive to the researchers who are used to clunky, complex setups, you know, like if your device can't convince those researchers to switch from their old clunky, weird devices to your new magical device, then maybe with the consumers it will be also tough. Because honestly, what would you do right now if you would have a Magic Leap? Like, you're not a heavy developer, me neither. What would you do? What would be your everyday task?
I mean, I have no idea. And that's exactly the thing. That's why they need these developers to like make the calendar app and make the email app or however any of that will work.
And then there's the typing problems, and there is, you know, the understanding the world, the computer vision. Like, it's just so nasty. I mean, VR alone is already way more complex than, you know, designing normal applications, and then you add just more complexity to it. I don't know. I'm optimistic that augmented reality at some point will be a true thing, but I'm skeptical whether, you know, the first gen devices or first generation device we will see will be necessarily the ones who conquer the market of a, you know, very skeptical mass adoption.
I'm way more interested with HMD-less AR, where it's like holograms. Like, I'm more interested in holographic displays.
Absolutely.
That can... So it takes more of the advantage of the spatial computing aspect of AR than it does with the immersiveness aspect. So it doesn't have to be immersive at all, I think, for an app to be useful or for spatial computing to be useful. I'm thinking like a future version of my desk could be without, you know, these black barred monitors that are on my desk, but a projector down below that's projecting whatever I need to see on my desk. Yes. And whether I have it still a mouse and keyboard or I have other forms of interaction on top of it as well, whether it's touch actually, I think eyes are going to be more of a thing by that point. I'm really into that. So
it might be the tongue. I mean, people control their wheelchair with their tongue very effectively. So you can, yes, you use like a small magnetic.
I know. But bolt. Like, no consumer technology is going to.
Please swallow your interface.
Yeah, please put your Magic Leap tongue reader in your mouth or your Facebook tongue reader.
Yeah, we want to get more data out of you. Just squeeze the last juices out of you. Also, it runs on your ATP, so you need to eat well, otherwise your brain will shut down because the device has priority.
I imagine if you have to feed your eye contact AR lenses with your own body energy first.
Exactly. It's just crazy. I don't know. What did you take away from the GDC except those few, you know, very remarkable devices and applications? Well, how was the setting? How were
it was cool. VR wasn't like the biggest thing, but it definitely had a presence when you're just walking around the show floor. Which I think is good, rather than it feeling like a novelty that every company's trying to push.
Yeah, it's not part of it, right?
It has its own place now. It like doesn't feel like a fad. It definitely feels like it had somewhat matured with like a lot of the companies that would have been there 2 years ago, like probably not even around anymore. Valve always does like a really classy booth where it's like away from all everything. It's like it's in its own room.
Always very simple.
They bring down the lights to like a nice blue. They put like smooth kind of French house in the background.
Nice.
And that's where I was hanging out most of the time with like the Northways, showing the Museum of Other Realities. Mm-hmm. And so my overall thoughts, my takeaways is that I was just really excited to see a lot of the friends that I have in the industry and just catching up with everyone. I think that was fantastic. I think these conferences are more valuable to the people in them than people like reading about them and being like, why is that a thing? Yes. It's just all about like, oh, like you go to lunch and you see like 15 other people that you know, and
yeah,
catch up everyone.
You exchange ideas and you have a confirmation that the whole industry is still driving, striving, and what you're doing is basically, you know, not an outlier, but something that, you know, everyone is pulling.
Yeah, and you realize a lot of the best stuff is just made by this one person or these two people or, like, you know, the small teams. And,
yeah.
And sometimes it's awesome seeing people for the first time at these conferences. They're like, I can't believe I'm meeting everyone that, like, you know, is on my Twitter feed or that I use their apps every day. And, like, that aspect still, to me, is awesome. So, I'm really grateful that I got to go after not being to these conferences for probably a good year or so. Takeaway, anything else that I could say? I'd say probably the hardware is maturing for sure on the VR side. That's not going away anytime soon. There's a lot more money being poured into hardware improvements. So the also developers were pretty happy in terms of Oculus Go and Oculus Santa Cruz, which Go is coming out soon, and Santa Cruz is, I think, later this year or next year. But all-in-one, six DOF controllers and six DOF headset, like, that's a killer combo. And
sure,
like, people were very stoked about what they saw. So the Vive Focus, apparently, that even though it has a three DOF controller now, might have a six DOF controller soon. But I don't know, like, how does the content work on that headset? Because it's all Vive port based, right?
Unfortunately, I'm not that used to Vive port. I'm not using it much. And as far as I understand, it's also not very strongly targeted Europe, right? So
no, but they will China be releasing it internationally soon.
Oh, okay. So you might know more about it. I guess you have special content for it. It basically can't run just Gear VR apps, right?
No. It's all Vive's vertically integrated system with Viveport and Vive Focus.
Interesting.
Everyone's trying to control the platform or create a platform at this point. Like, everyone wants to control everything that they can control.
And honestly, I think at some point there will be a headset that will be just, you know, open and you can use everything.
Open
and
VR?
It will be maybe open VR. I don't know.
OS VR?
Well, maybe not OS VR. Maybe it's slightly more sexy than that. But but it won't be as good as everyone else. People will just say, okay, I'll just get it. It just can run everything.
Nope.
Most likely this won't happen.
Nope. Yep. That's not how consumer technology and consumer behavior works.
But I wanted so much to lose all the ties to those platforms. Every day I'm getting deeper and deeper into those, platform.
Before we wrap things up, I actually, if you guys are interested in hearing more about photogrammetry, I have been talking to someone named the 3D Scan Expert on Twitter. This guy's legit. He's got a great website, actually. He does a lot of reviews of photogrammetry software and hardware, comparison stuff, stuff that is way beyond what I've even tried. So he's going to be a big wealth of information that we'll be interviewing soon. So yeah, let me know if you're interested on hearing more in those topics or if any of the things that we talked about on the podcast that you would like for us to kind of dig into a little bit deeper.
We have a lot of special episodes prepared for you that are coming soon.
Yeah, I've got a whole list of people that have agreed to be interviewed and I've just not scheduled them yet. But
I have to tell you, I have also a few people that I forced to agree from the IEEE with my persuasive beard. For example, the 5G guy who did this eye tracking, 5G foveated video streaming. And I also want to have an episode on redirected walking. I tried it for myself. Finally, it works very good. And there is a lot of research being developed to that. So I hope that we will at some point also managed to have 3-4 episodes in between that are, again, a little bit more scientific. What I would like to point out, actually, is our Discord channel. I'm in love with it. I'm so happy as I started it.
Yeah, man.
I mean, the discussions are just so good. So please join our Discord channel. However, I just read a pinned message here in our news channel. Azad wrote, discuss recent events in news about VR and IR industry. Only quality posts. No spam or clickbait or fake news, please.
It.
Just my first time I saw it, so I'm just yes. Yeah, and the discussions are really good. So we had a really long discussion about ethics, really long discussion about guns, really long discussions about different technologies. Amazing. Right.
Right, right. No, it's growing. Ian Hamilton after the episode was on the Discord, and Anton from H3 was on the Discord. We actually even when we tweeted out last week's episode, we had Jeremy Bailenson, you know, the professor that wrote the CNN article that we were discussing, actually tweeted back and saying, thank you.
Really nice.
Yeah, thank you for actually, you know, taking the time to like having a thorough and thoughtful discussion on this and not misrepresenting his points, which I think was very easy to do with that subject. So happy that he listened. And yeah, I gotta go, and my computer needs to finish this damn photogrammetry scan
that's been going run for. Because I at some point also need some tips from you, because I'm getting now this photogrammetry software that you're using.
Reality capture.
Will not be, reality capture. I won't be as good as you. I think no one at some point will be as good as you, because your scans are just magnificent. However, I want to scan a chair. I just want to scan a chair.
You should scan a chair and perhaps a couch, because couches are very easy and great subjects for photogrammetry.
You see, we have this bachelor student here at a company I'm working for who took this lighthouse tracking system and integrated it inside the chair. And it tracks, and now he wants to have a really good representative model of the chair. And I want to scan it, and I want to see how easy it is. And then, and if I manage to scan with the software, then I can totally recommend it, because it's idiot-proof.
I would, for first-timers, actually, I would recommend 3DF Zephyr, 3D Flow Zephyr. They have a free version. I actually need to update my tutorial that I wrote for new users, but because I used to recommend Autodesk Recap, which now is like changed their models, but 3DF Zephyr, or if you want to go all out and ball out on Steam, get Reality Capture. Use your phone, man. I think if you don't have a DSLR,
it works too. Okay, I think I actually have to run, because the office will be closed soon.
I can tell people are walking behind you and trying to get you to kick out.
Yes,
thank you everyone for listening in, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye. Bye.